Arnold, welcome to Discover Your Talent, Do What You Love, number 239. I'm creator and host, Don Hutchison. Every day I interview someone from around the world who has discovered his talents to do work he loves to create a life of success, satisfaction, and freedom. An only child in a town with only one TV station long before the internet, Robert Hartline learned how to turn his shyness and isolation into door openers. Fear factors into his success in a major way. Don't interrupt and don't talk to strangers factor in too, but not as you might think. Welcome, Robert.
Hi, Don. Thanks for having me.
It is our pleasure. Robert, are you using your talents doing work that you love?
I am today.
Well, that's really all that matters. That's perfect. We want to hear the whole story. Robert Hartline is the founder of Callproof, a serial entrepreneur. He's built his businesses to where today they generate $24 million plus in total revenues. His expertise around sales and automating follow-up sequences have helped hundreds of entrepreneurs and salespeople, contributing to millions of dollars in additional sales. So, Robert, that's a pithy summary of your career. Tell us what you're involved in now that has you engaged and excited, if you will.
I guess today, Don, you know, I'm focused on growing Callproof as a SaaS startup that I started about 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's kind of a change in direction from my entrepreneurial life. It's been fun. I've learned a ton. So that's where I'm probably most engaged today.
Yeah, we learned a little bit about that as we were getting together for this interview. Tell our listeners a little bit of the background for Callproof. It sounds like a very fascinating and much needed idea.
Yeah, so, you know, most entrepreneurs tend to be their best salesperson, but once your organization starts growing and you're growing a sales team, you got to release the reins of sales to someone else, and often that someone else can be better at it. Mm-hmm. And once you start getting a sales team together, it's really difficult to manage the daily activity of salespeople. And, you know, if you have salespeople that you don't see every day in your office, as the owner or sales management, you kind of want to know what their daily activity is like so you can motivate and hold them accountable to get the revenue that you need to succeed. And so we have an app that takes all their calls history and throws them into the cloud and matches with own clients and prospects and automatically gives you some insight of what their day-to-day daily sales activities are without them having to enter a bunch of stuff in the CRM. So, you know, the basic synopsis of Callproof, yes, we do all the things that you see in a CRM, but we're more focused on the reporting of the daily activity and helping salespeople see more people in the day.
Wow, that's it couldn't be a more essential function, and I'm sure it just puts a big multiplier on productivity and efficiency.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, as you know, as we've discussed, everyone's life is composed of a series of turning points. Some call them passages, and at these times in our lives, we face challenges and choices and obstacles and issues that we deal with, and then we move forward, and these start from a very early age. And this show is about sharing entrepreneur and individuals' turning points and stories with listeners around the world. So take us back as far in your backstory as you will, and tell us about your life and what's made Robert Hartline Robert Hartline.
I guess for me, as you know, growing up as an only child, I kind of had to figure out what I wanted to do. I grew up in a small town in Germany and didn't have a huge social world. I had one television show to watch, one television station to watch called AFN, Armed Forces Network. And being that you've been in the military, you probably know what I'm talking about.
Yes,
but
I do.
It's pretty much the only station that service dependents have to watch, which was probably a good blessing for me because it didn't spend a lot of time in front of the television because there wasn't much to watch. But I really got throughout school, I was really into music. And it's funny when you look back at your childhood and realize you didn't have internet, you didn't have a lot of other things to do. You wonder, heck, what were you doing?
I mean, precisely.
And luckily, my dad got me a computer real early, probably when I was 13 or so. And now I look back at it, it's like I had a computer with no internet.
Oh, my word.
You know, if right now, Don, your computer's internet connection stopped, you would just get up and walk away.
Oh, exactly.
There is really no use for it. But anyways.
Your dad was really a savvy guy to get you into that at such a young age. That was quite insightful.
No, he was. And it was a good thing for me because it really gave me an opportunity to learn how to hack and learn how to play around with a computer and just get used to using it.
But,
For me, my journey was I wanted to be in the music business. And when I came to Nashville, Tennessee, thinking that's what I wanted to do. And there's a couple of things I learned pretty much in the first month of going to school is, number one, I didn't play guitar. Number two, I'm not a big country music fan.
Right.
And the people that I saw in the business were really having a tough time making a go of it.
Were you in school, Robert? Were you just learning the music business by working in it? Or what were you doing at the time?
So I went to Middle Tennessee State University, which is in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and they have a recording industry management program, and I was there a couple years. Really, probably after my first semester, I decided that I wanted to get a sales job, and the sales job that I kind of found myself in was a company called Telego, selling phones door-to-door. So I was literally going door-to-door and knocking on someone's house at 6 o'clock in the afternoon and trying to get them to buy a phone.
Why did you think you'd like that, or why were you drawn to that?
You know, to be honest with you, I wasn't really drawn to it, but I had a roommate that told me about this job, and when they told me that I got paid to go to training, I was all about it. And so a little bit of desperation will make you do things you would not normally do, and I'm definitely was not the outgoing sales guy that you typically see. It was out of my comfort zone, super shy guy. But, you know, I was very lucky, and a lot of salespeople aren't lucky like this. And that is, I had a couple of early good wins. I've seen a lot of people try sales. They try a couple of days, whatever they're selling. And if they don't have any success, they think, well, sales is awful and difficult and I'm not good at it. Some people may think, but, you know, I'm a believer that just about anybody can be good at selling. It just takes some a little bit longer than others. But I learned probably early on that for me, probably the most lucrative career path was selling. And I tell my team every day when I'm doing interviews that, you know, I don't care how little school you have, or you didn't like going to school, or just really didn't know what you wanted to do with your life. If you can find joy and excitement in selling, it is by far the most lucrative career on planet Earth. And there's not one other career that can make you more money.
Yes,
than
exactly.
Selling.
Exactly. As somebody who's been doing this a while, what do you say to your team, or what do you say to prospective salespeople that work with you about the characteristics that make, because it's a complicated question, but you know the answer. What makes a great salesperson? What makes sales and marketing person? Because it's both, obviously.
Yeah, and it's so funny. A lot of people seem to think that there's two different people, but
right.
They have two different roles, but they do the same thing.
Precisely.
In a different way. But for me, what makes great salespeople is something that just as humans, we all can do a better job of, and that's listening.
Yes.
And, you know, I typically will find a great salesperson because I'll see the rapport building. And in rapport building, if I see a salesperson that's doing a lot of listening and not a lot of me, I can see that a sale's going to go down. Something's going to happen.
Yes.
Because the longer that customer talks in the beginning about themselves, because we all want to talk about ourselves.
Yes, we do.
It's part of that rapport building. And when I see that rapport being built, I'm like, that's the sales guy, because
yes.
He's willing to listen and stop and just let the customer talk, ask questions, get that person comfortable. And when I train salespeople today, I spend an awful lot of time talking about how important rapport building is.
Yeah, and when they open up and you're transparent and genuine and empathetic, then they tell you what their problems are, which is what the main thing you want to hear at first. You know, how can you help them, right?
Absolutely.
So what happened next? What happened next in the...
You know, for me, I did that for a few years, and I love the freedom that sales gave me.
Were you still with Telego? Or what?
Telego was...
Telego.
It was actually started by a company called GTE, which is now turned into Verizon. But I did that for a number of years until they disbanded, and then I ended up getting a job as a account executive for Cellular One, which is now Verizon. But did that for a number of years, and then a couple of things I learned along that journey is a lot of salespeople couldn't make it because it was so hard. It's, you know, June in Nashville, door-to-door on the street is not the most comfortable place to be sweating, and so they really had a hard time with turnover. But what I did learn was the longer I did it, the better I got at it and the better, more referrals I got. And so it was easy to kind of grow that business. And so, you know, once Nextel launched in Nashville, I started with Nextel. And then probably about 12 months later, I had my own business.
Oh, my gosh. I'm curious to know this because I don't think there's any more challenging marketing or sales job than door-to-door anything. I think it's just incredibly, because you don't know what to expect. Is the baby just going to have thrown up on the mother's shoulder, or is the dog barking? Did the people have a fight, or are they, you know, nice people willing to listen to you? How did you gauge those as you're going door-to-door? What was your mindset to say, okay, this is the fourth call of the day? Did you just clear your mind and expect anything, and just as long as you were present, you could handle it? What did you do?
I think, first off, the strongest sensation of fear is probably the best description of door-to-door selling. It's absolutely terrifying to knock on a stranger's door,
yes,
and be that guy. But when you overcome the fear of imposing on someone's world that's in the middle of dinner or whatever, mm-hmm, and yes, you're interrupting their TV show, you're interrupting their conversation with family, you're interrupting their sleep. I mean, all those things are just kind of awful things.
Yes.
And they happen, and you just have to let it just brush off your shoulders and power through. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing more exciting. And to this day, I really love seeing this with my team, because I see my sales team do this, is, you know, when I would knock on a door and it's clearly interrupting them, mm-hmm, and they were clearly annoyed that I was even standing on planet Earth at, yes, that moment in front of them, to get them to open up, talk to me, they would invite me in and offer me sweet tea.
Oh, boy.
And it was those times, or a beer, or they'd feed me. It was those just connecting with another human that was a total stranger. And sometimes, yeah, they were probably lonely people, or sometimes they just needed someone to talk to. Maybe they weren't going to buy. But I really had a newfound respect for just people. And, you know, people are going through their worlds, trapped in their glass bubble of a car,
yes,
listening to the same radio stations, talking to the same people.
Right.
But when you knock on their door, you're basically saying, hey, I exist.
Right.
Talk to me.
Right. Right.
And some people would.
Right. Except that I'm sure, just talking to you a little bit, I'm sure that they knew that you were not a huckster that was going to throw a bunch of jargon at them to try to manipulate your way into the door. They knew that you were respectful right off the bat. Is that not true? Wasn't that the key to it?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, there was just phrases that you would use, or my, you know, really, I paid attention to my mannerisms to always match theirs. I'd always, if I knocked on the door, I didn't stand on their, you know, front of their door, I would stand back 6 feet.
Okay.
And I always had good distance, because I wanted to, number one, say, hey, I'm not going to cause you any harm, and
yes,
and tried to earn their respect. And I would, right, you know, I'd try to get closer as I built, they had some confidence in me. But
right,
I learned a lot about overcoming the fear that talking to strangers naturally do. We all have this thing our parents taught us, that not to talk to strangers.
Yes.
But if you're ever going to be in sales, you got to get over that. You got to get over the talking to strangers. And, you know, once you get over that, I mean, really, you have this income producing tool on your face that if you, mm-hmm, open up in the right places with people and ask people questions, people will want to buy from you. But you just have to take those opportunities to overcome those fears of talking to strangers.
Yes. And there's some people, it's inborn, that's never going to happen. And there's that other group, you're obviously one, that you just connect. You simply connect with people.
Yep.
So, as you know, the statistics around the world are that most people don't find their sweet spot. There have been studies by Gallup and all kinds of research organizations with millions of people over the last several decades. And they're going through their lives. They're making a living, most of them, and doing decent work. But they don't feel like their life is as fulfilling as it could be. What do you think? You figured out early on what your sweet spot was, and you followed it from the early get-go in Nashville. Why do you think most people can't get there? What holds them back?
Well, clearly it's an education system that's built around getting you to work for other people.
Yes.
The reality is, if we taught from a very early age entrepreneurship, would we have enough people to do the things that you and I would not want to do? And so I get how our education system needs to supply a country with workers. But if you're like me that has trouble focusing on one particular task, is a total dreamer, doesn't like to be told what to do, hard to sit down and study, not interested in atoms and chemistry, mm-hmm. not interested in math, not interested in all the things that you're taught in school, mm-hmm. and, you know, maybe entrepreneurship is for you, you know?
Right.
And so I think a lot of people, it's just not having the exposure to, you know, for me, and I'm talking specifically, you know, entrepreneurship.
Right.
And the school system is just not built that way. And then if I were just going off a whole nother tangent, and that's just our higher education system is not producing a great, capable workforce.
Right. Precisely right. It's interesting, though, isn't it, now with this amazing thing called the Internet that's been going on since the early 90s. And so it's just exploding in so many wonderful ways that the young people today, because they use it, they get up and they're on Facebook and they're on Twitter and they're on Instagram and they're on Snapchat and they're doing all these things every day, that so many, the capacity for them to see themselves as entrepreneurs is measurably greater than certainly I'm a couple of decades older than you, but certainly greater than my generation had and even greater than your generation had. Because there it is, right there, every day, just bang, 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 bang on Facebook and et cetera.
Yeah, and what's incredibly, I think, for me, just amazing is the power of having the Internet to figure out, number one, what you want to do, and then how you want to do it. It's all readily available, whether you grew up extremely wealthy or you're dirt poor. If you mm-hmm. have an Internet connection, you, in theory, have almost the same opportunity as anyone on planet Earth to succeed. And the steps to get there are all just documented. Whether you listen to, you know, your podcast or other podcasts or follow blogs of successful people, and just if you made it your habit, and this is something that I tell all my team to do, is if you really want to increase your wealth, the first step is cancel cable and substitute the time you would spend watching meaningless shows and watching commercials to influence your buying behavior, is to spend the time and energy to learn on the web via all the channels that they're available to learn. And then the second thing I tell people besides cable is if you have a long commute, move closer to work or find a new job, because commuting is taking away your precious time. And I see so many families impacted with a poor commute that is absolutely healthy, you know, killing the health of not only them as a person, but just the quality of life. And, you know, we only have X amount of hours in a day. Why on earth would you dedicate it behind the wheel of a car? I don't know.
Right. Exactly. Robert, you know what's fascinating about this, what you were saying about people getting in this system that's pretty narrow, is that now, because of the rampant online learning thing through webinars and podcasts and all kinds of other modalities, that all kinds of different entrepreneurs like us, like you and us and our team, are coming up with courses, for the heaven's sakes. You know, it's great to have a liberal arts education, but if people want to get out there and get in the game, there are courses on how you start your own hair salon.
Yeah.
And they're damn good. They're really good courses. We thought we interviewed one entrepreneur like you, highly successful, in Sedona, and she's got all these courses, and they're exhaustively comprehensive. They, you know, they're like $1,000, not $30,000 for a year at a good school. And you go through that sucker, and you're able to get out there and make your way, you know, figure it out as you go.
Oh, yeah. And there's so many niches to get into online.
Yes.
That, you know, I have a friend that does, he makes music videos about Minecraft.
Oh, okay.
And he takes pop songs and changes the lyrics to talk about Minecraft, which is an online video game that my kids love to play.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I know it.
And you go online and you watch these videos that are incredibly well done with 20 million views.
Can you imagine?
And he's making money on the web with a small team of creators in the Ukraine. So it's like,
okay.
But there's so many, you know, they always say the riches in the niches, but
yes,
there's so many different avenues that are still widely available that people, I mean, even if you're in a career, just as, let's just say you were a plumber, you wouldn't believe it, but there's not a ton of podcasts about plumbing.
Right. Right.
And if you really wanted to get to that audience, Well, that's not too hard to do because those guys are in their car all day and they want to learn how to grow their business. They're no different than any other online entrepreneur.
No, you're incredibly savvy about that because we've been in podcast master groups and there are thousands, like 250,000 podcasts, and they're podcasts on everything imaginable. You could literally throw out any topic and there would be a podcast on it. And if you serve that audience well, okay, you know, everybody wins through sponsorships mm-hmm. and everything else. Well, what have been the most palpable benefits? You've had just a fine career here, and you followed your instincts and used your talents and gained great experience, and you built some great companies. What are the best deliverables to you in your life, personally, professionally, family-wise? What's the takeaway?
I guess, you know, I treat my business as an asset that pays me to live. Mm-hmm. And I don't work in the business. I absolutely work on it. Mm-hmm. You know, anybody that's looking to get into business, you have to read eMyth. Even if you've read it again, get in a mastermind group and read it with the group. Mm-hmm. I see so many times that people want to own a business and they become the technician in their business.
Yes.
And they're basically trading where their paycheck comes from, but they're doing the same old work. And if you enjoy it, that's great. But, you know, I learned long ago that, you know, I have friends that work with their hands and they get paid very well to work with their hands, whether they're chiropractors or they're dentists. But the reality is you only have two of those hands.
Yes.
And if you are the technician in your business, there's no possible way that that business is going to work for you. You know, you're working for the business. And, you know, I know a lot of people in transition trying to figure out what they want to do. And the beauty is because of the internet, we do have so many avenues to reach out to help us along with you yourself. You know, people reaching out to you and saying they need help, figuring out what their destiny is going to be, figuring out what they really want to do with their life. And the sad thing is a lot of people don't force themselves into change until an event happens.
Well said. Well said.
Something, you know, whether they lost their job or had a family member pass away. I mean, sometimes it's like we all have a moment in time where something slaps us in the face and it's like, gosh, what have I been doing? I've been running on autopilot.
Yes, you're exactly right. That's a key point. So springboard off of that just for a minute or two and share off of that very idea that people just get stopped before they take the time to reflect. And give our listeners just a few pointers or insights from your experience that you share with others about how they don't have to wait until something bad happens. What do they do, in your opinion? How do they learn? How do they listen to that inner voice, if you will?
For me, I always had a natural stopping point. Every year, I would go see my folks in Germany to go on a ski trip. And I would get on a plane and I had 8 hours to kind of decompress. I'd go do my ski vacation, get back on the plane. And it was that plane ride gave me reflection. You know, if you were to go run a marathon right now, and when you finish the marathon, it's really hard to reflect on the run. But if you were to sit down and relax and just a few hours later, if you actually did absolutely nothing, the reflection period would naturally come in your head and start thinking about what you just experienced, what you liked about it, the thrill of finishing it. And, you know, we all have these reflection points. And it could be you're sitting in a hospital room with someone that you love is passing away. Mm-hmm. That's a reflection point. And you're thinking to yourself, gosh, life is precious. We are going to die. And, you know, it could be a car accident. It could be something that jolts you to go, gosh, you know, this isn't the life I've chosen, but the life is happening to me. And often it's the people around you that you've become, and you are who your friends are.
Yes.
And sometimes it could be a move that can snap you out of it. Sometimes it's, you know, just the decision that you make that, listen, I'm going to change and be better at life and taking ownership of my circumstances. But, you know, it's different for everyone and you can't shove it down someone's throat. So if you see someone that's not winning, you can't make them a winner. No. You know, it's something that people have to kind of discover on their own.
Yes, you couldn't be more right. We've had so many guests on the show say, you can take these small steps. You talked about having a shorter commute and turning off cable. And if they just knew, okay, whether they're 25 in their first job or 55, you know, being in a job longer than they wanted to be, if they would just pull back and be reflective and read some interesting books or just journal or talk to, as you said earlier, talk to some friends that they respect. Oh, it's, you can make quantum leaps if you just work on it just a little bit at a time.
Oh, yeah, that's, Donnie, you're just bringing up just a fantastic point because, you know, it's just nibbling away to get to your end goal.
Yes.
You know, if you just nibble little incremental improvements, and it could be as tiny as just making a decision that you're going to go to bed at 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to make an effort to get up and do some exercise. You can make an effort to do a little bit of meditating.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to make an effort to get in front of people that are doing what you want to do.
Yes.
And the first thing I'm going to do when my sons are old enough is really try to get them exposed to people that are doing what they enjoy to do and that they can hopefully have as mentors at some moment. And,
oh,
you know, if I had a magic wand, I think instead of going to school, I think school is great. I think I would have done a lot, done some traveling to figure out what I wanted to do. But I think, you know, the first thing I think for everyone is, you know, find the mentor as soon as possible, because you could really leapfrog everyone else with the right mentor.
Oh, no question. Your sons are very lucky to have you as a father, because very few people that I've ever run across in my life have had that experience. It's just been sort of catch as catch can. And if you put them in that environment, there's going to be somebody over time. You know, it could be the artist, it could be the scientist, it could be the salesman, it could be, who knows what it is, it doesn't matter. But your sons will relate to that. So what do you see happening in your worldview over the next few years? Where are you headed? What's your personal vision?
You know, for me, you know, I'm still creating. I have a couple of SaaS products I'm building. But, you know, I'm probably going to be one of those guys that will have several different companies running. I enjoy starting stuff. I enjoy finding the right talent to run it. And I love moving on to new and better ideas. And I love to tinker in my business. So for me, I certainly think it's probably going to be more of taking ideas. I've been on this little journey to take small ideas and grow them.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm taking a little bit bigger ideas and trying to grow those as well.
Wow, fantastic. So what are you proudest of?
Gosh, I'm probably proudest as a dad.
Mm-hmm.
I think you know, it's fun watching my sons grow and learn. And there's probably nothing more exciting than watching their excitement while they learn something new or experiencing something different, or, you know, even just watching them fail and then picking themselves up. That's probably what I celebrate the most.
Wow, that's beautiful. Well, Robert Hartline, I want to tell you that it's been a great pleasure being with you today. We appreciate you sharing the highlights of your life journey, and I know that listeners around the world have learned lessons that will serve them on their journeys. So how do those listeners get in touch with you?
I have a blog if you need help in the sales management department at callproof.com/blog. You can also reach me by email at robert@callproof.com.
Excellent. Listeners know you can go to our homepage, discoveryourtalentpodcast.com, and click on podcast and find Robert's, the show notes of this fine interview along with those connecting points. Real easy to access. I want to thank listeners across the world, as always, for joining us today on our show. As you know, we put some research into the great thinkers in personal development and career planning and came up with an infographic, What Do Highly Successful People Actually Do to Succeed, 12 Proven Career Building Strategies to Help You Do What You Love. Robert has shared many of those strategies today in our interview. It's a free resource, and we've had great feedback from listeners around the world, and take advantage of it if you would. If you want to join, if you like the content, you want to join our show, it's free on iTunes or Stitcher, and we'd love to have you be a part of our tribe and tell us how we can serve you better. In closing, every one of us is born with unique talents and gifts. We don't learn them. We cannot ignore them. They're just a part of who we are, our DNA. Whenever we discover them and use them in our lives and careers, we do not merely survive. We thrive in every way possible. So until next time, all my best, and whatever you do, have fun out there today.